Only a cup of cold water. Seems like a very simple act of kindness that just naturally would occur, especially when there's a little one involved, as he says. Yet Jesus says that whoever gives one of these little ones only a cup of cold water in the name of a disciple shall by no means lose his reward. And what that means to me is, as in a lot of Jesus' teaching, is it seems natural, but it's not necessarily what people practice and do. Most people are not doing this most basic act of kindness. And you have to ask yourself, how can this be? So we're going to talk more about this cup of cold water. Before my father passed away, and that's 1997. That's been a good number of years ago now. One of the things that he was rolling around, he was a school teacher, but he's also a preacher. I grew up him preaching all the time. He said, you know, I think it's a cup of cold water that's going to get a lot of people. It's like, okay. And the more you think about that, I think that you'll see as we go through this that, yeah, we just might be falling short on something that just seems very natural. Now, I believe Jesus was making the same basic point over in Matthew 25. So turn over there. It's a lengthy passage. I'm not planning on reading it. It's readily referred to by me because it deals with this very point that Jesus is making. I think very much the same point when he says, I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me, and I was in prison, verse 36, and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and fed you, or thirsty and give you drink? And when did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick and in prison and come to you? And the king will answer and say to them, assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me. Acts of kindness. And in the context is where he says there's a separation. You got the sheep and the goats. And he says the ones on the right, when he makes this, he says, those are the righteous that when I say to them that I was hungry and I was thirsty and you did something about that. And they think, well, Jesus, when did we do that for you? He says, when you do that for other people, that's the same as doing this for me. But the second half of this is, then he will say to those on the left hand, depart from me, verse 41, you accursed, into the everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me no food. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you did not take me in, naked, and you did not clothe me, sick and in prison, and you did not visit me. Then they also answered him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and did not minister to you? When did we not come and do these things that would just be the right thing to do? And he says, assuredly I say to you, as much as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. And these shall go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. So now again, when you come back to Matthew chapter 10, do you see some likenesses there when he says that if you will give a cup of cold water as a disciple in my name, there's great reward, where there's this act of kindness, this cup of cold water. And so that truth about only a cup of cold water is not just something I think to just gloss over. It's a very serious teaching. And it is a truth that Jesus is highlighting, and so again, it's an individual responsibility that tells the broad way leads to destruction, the narrow way to eternal life. So when we talk about these things, we're talking about the righteous, the few, the many on the left. So I think we have to look at this also from the standpoint of, again, not everybody's doing it and more are not doing this. And so I think that's found in this idea as well. But for Jesus to come right out and say, only a cup of cold water in my name, and there's reward that won't be taken away. It's like, well, that's what I should do. This is something I should be interested in and understand. Well, the cup of cold water represents really an unselfish act. It is, as I often say, we have to be perceptive and look for opportunities. And the Bible is perfectly clear that we cannot be concerned with only ourselves. So Philippians chapter 2 and in verse 4 makes that very clear. Let each of you, that's personal, let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but also for the interest of others. And so I cannot only be in my world. And so a cup of cold water back in our text, see, that represents a disciple of Jesus Christ in the truest sense. Again, and whoever gives one of these little ones only a cup of cold water in the name of a disciple, in the name of a believer, a follower of Jesus Christ, a follower of him, he said, assuredly, I say to you, he shall by no means lose his reward. So this cup of cold water, actually it represents what we might say is a true disciple. Somebody who's really following Christ. So let that sink in from the standpoint of we think about, well, who in the world would not do that? Such a simple thing, and then start looking at ourselves and think, could that be me? How could I be doing that? What might I be doing? Am I? Do I always do this? Well, this problem of being self-centered or this unselfish act, I'm sorry, that looks so good here, but then you put it up there and the black just disappears in the red. So I want you to think for just a moment the culture that we're growing up in, or we're going to go back to when we were born even, but our nation is often considered by other nations of third world that we're arrogant. You know, we're very self-centered. That's hard to believe when you think about, but we're the most generous, so you got that conflict that kind of goes around in your head, but this problem is not unique to America. When I was going over this, I actually made some changes because it's not just an American problem. It's a problem that has been around since the beginning of time. And it was present in Jesus' day. This is why he brought that to their attention. This only a cup of cold water. But if you were born in the 70s, and these all have beginning dates and later, and some start in the 60s and run through the 70s and so forth. But that generation became known as the me generation. And the word narcissist is a word that is used to describe someone who is in love with him or herself. And it's the person that really everything turns around to me, and is this to my benefit, and what's it going to mean for me? And I'm not going to do that because it's me, you know. So that generation became known as the me generation. And they are preoccupied with their wants and wishes. Well, I was born in 1966. And so, you know, my early years coming through the 70s, you know, I was a baby then, an 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, you know, through the 70s. You can see how this mindset is in total conflict with Philippians 2, verse 4. That, you know, again, it not to have this selfish, self-centered looking inward at myself. But that's the way a lot of people really have grown up. It's about me. And there are studies out now about the increase in narcissism with the millennial generation. And the millennial generation is between 1985 and 1996. So I've got some of the kids like Nicholas and Simon who would be considered millennial. because they were born in 93 and 95. And they're now in their 30s and some in their 40s. Well, according to a Time magazine article in May of 2013 by a Joel Stein, they are highly narcissistic in personality. Now, again, this is very broad, okay? And then it, quote, they are so convinced of their own greatness that the National Study of Youth and Religion found the guiding morality of 60% of millennials in any situation is that they'll just be able to feel what's right. Can you imagine we got 30 and 40-year-olds walking around and they're very self-centered and they just have this idea that, well, I'll just feel what's the right thing to do. Well, that can be pretty devastating to a person's soul, to say the least. But this parallel, and the reason I bring it up, is it's actually run parallel with the decline in faith. So as faith has gone down, this type of thing has been running parallel with it. In other words, I'm more self-centered and thinking about myself, and so has been this decline in faith. But I want to also point out that there is around us that we're seeing, that there is young people that are starting to see that there's something more to life than that type of spirit and attitude. So they would say, well, they're becoming more religious-minded. So we have to be mindful of that, and we need to take advantage of opportunities as people are seeking the truth. But again, it can't be a feel-good type of religion that many of them will latch on to. So there's opportunity, and you might be thinking of young people around you where you have an opportunity to, because they're searching and they can see and want something different. I know that there's this millennial generation is more concerned about minimal things. They're more concerned about being able to have time with their families than to just be on the job for 60, 70, 80 hours, which is another generation that's exactly how it was. So there is there's good things moving in the right direction. But let me come back to our subject. As Jesus points out, not many people, if you think about that, are really looking past themselves to see one in need of a cup of cold water. And you can almost picture the idea of here's somebody that really, I mean, physically, and the cup of cold waters we'll talk about, you know, it's the unselfish act. It's not literally, but the image comes to mind that here's somebody and they're just there. It reminds you of Jesus' teaching on the Good Samaritan. You know, the priest and the Levite just kind of step over the guy, go around him, won't even have anything to do with him. So here's somebody who's really thirsty and you just go, I don't have time for them, just move on. And that's the reality of the way a lot of people function and go through life. And so this is something that we each one of us who are Christians, you know, we have to be concerned about. We have to look into the mirror. We have to think about how or what am I doing. Diamond Rio a few years ago came out with a song. It's a beautiful song, by the way. But the whole thought is this famous violinist took out his fiddle somewhere like, let's say, it was probably somewhere like New York City, and he started playing, and they just walked by. Didn't stop, didn't listen. And then he went and played at Carnegie Hall. And while he's playing the same pieces, he smiled because he thought they're paying all this money, and they were paying no attention to what was going on right in front of them. And that's the way a lot of people, it's where I'm going, and we get into this mindset. And so let me talk about this idea of individualism, hyper-individualism. And what that is that emphasizes personal success and satisfaction at the expense of social connection and collective responsibilities. Well, that describes a lot of people too, doesn't it? Driven, I've got my goals, and I'm not going to, I don't have time for any kind of relationships. I don't have time for God now. And Paul Earnhardt, and I had him down, I pulled this article some time ago, but I had him as the author, and if he wasn't, it's my apology, because I've got a quote that was also in there, and it may have just been the quote was his. But everyday, ordinary Christians have gradually been moved into the mindset, and we're talking about this, it's around the me generation. Everyday, ordinary Christians have gradually been moved into this mindset, me, and don't even realize that it has happened. And so most good folks think that they are the same as many years ago. Now you think about that with me for a minute. We tend to see ourselves as what we once did. Perfect example. Me and a member of the church went to visit a man whose wife brought those little kids every time to services down there in Florida. The dad hit and miss. Never knew if he's going to be there. We went to visit him to encourage him. All he could talk about is when he once did and used to go out and door knock with somebody else and all this. And it's like, okay, that was then. Where are you at now? Those are two different things. You're not seeing yourself as you are today. And so many good folks think that they are the same as many years ago. I give cups of cold water. When's the last time? Wow, that might have been a long time ago. You see my point? Because we tend to think and see, well, this is who I am, and it not be exactly who we are. And so he goes on, he says, began some time ago and was accentuated during COVID-19. Remember, he says, that was 5 years ago. Well, that's been six now. Seven, if you go back to 2019. We were forced into isolation, masked, segregated, and had a no-touch rule. All of these things encourage the me or individual syndrome. You see what he's pointing out? It made us think only about ourselves. Okay, well, we're past that. But his point is to be well taken. We have to look carefully at our own life to see have we gradually moved away to some form of isolation. And that's a real thing that can happen. And what we do then is we neglect the opportunities to share a cup of cold water because we've actually withdrawn ourselves. Have I become self-absorbed? I need to ask that question. Have I become isolated and no longer reaching out to others as I have in the past? You see, sharing cups of cold water is a learned thing, a purposeful action on our part. It's a learned thing, and it's a purposeful action. So it's not something that I, as a Christian, as a disciple, can just kind of let go by the wayside. Now, all that sounds kind of psychological, as I've been putting this. I mean, in some of the statistics I've cited. But it's really to get us to always look internal to say, you know what? Maybe I have become too busy to have more time for more important things. And that, of course, made me think of Martha. Today we could say it's the Martha syndrome, where we, again, have become so absorbed and we don't really see the more important thing, and we'll come back to that in just a moment. But now this is, quote, almost 100% is from Paul Earnhardt. He says this, "We have watched as people burn the candle at both ends and offer God the smoke." And we might say, compared to when? You know, the Christian is always supposed to be maturing and doing more. And of course, as we get older, you know, and everything slows down, you can still do all these things. You're going to have to do it smarter. You know, but boy, you think about your perception and being able to spot opportunities and things like that to give cups of cold water. You would think that, you know, there's been a maturity there and an understanding of how important that is, that this is not something that has been left aside. But I've heard far too many, I've never heard it personally, but I've heard far too many times of older members of the church saying, let the younger ones do it. When the younger ones need the older, setting the example, showing the steady way, and yet they say, I've done my due diligence, and it's somebody else's turn. That wouldn't be right. All right, so let's talk about the cup of cold water, and the lesson will be yours. A cup of cold water thinks about somebody else. The little child shall give a cup, one of these little ones, and some suggest that that could be a new convert, somebody who's a babe in Christ. But it would represent the most vulnerable person, wouldn't it? One of these little ones, they need a cup of cold water. How careless do we have to be to neglect such a basic act of compassion and kindness? I mean, we'd have to be pretty self-absorbed. So we're tired. That's easy enough. I always hate to bring this up, it's Sunday afternoon. Not long we'll be going back to work. That's kind of weighs on our mind sometimes, and we might even be thinking about that and drifting out in and out now because we think I've got stuff to do tomorrow, and I'm sure wish the weekend was longer, and those kinds of things that go along with life. We have responsibilities, but again, we don't want to develop the Martha syndrome. You remember, Martha, Martha, you're so worried, Matthew 10, 41 and 42, right here. You are so worried. I'm sorry, got the wrong quote. I think it's Luke 10, perhaps. You are worried and troubled about so many things, but one thing is needed. Mary has chosen that good part, which will not be taken away from her. And what that means is, go back to Matthew 25. We've missed an opportunity to visit the sick. We have missed the opportunity and neglected an opportunity to clothe one in need. We have failed to do our duty as an ambassador of Jesus Christ. Steve, you mentioned in your prayer, letting your light shine. You are an ambassador of Jesus Christ. And we don't, because of busyness, responsibilities, we don't let our light shine. We don't give that cup of cold water. And that's what Jesus means when he says, in the name of a disciple, in my name, you're doing these things, you've done it to me. You're representing Christ. And he says, if you do this, then you're not going to lose your reward. No way. So if I'm thinking about, I don't want to miss the reward of heaven, I need to be concerned about the cups of cold water. Remember in our lesson 2 weeks ago when we talked about great accomplishments that have no benefit or profit, one of those was, I could give all my goods, but I don't have love. There's no benefit, there's no profit. It has accomplished nothing. Look at 1 John chapter 3 and verse 7. 1 John chapter 3 and verse 7 by way of reminder. 1 John 3 verse 7 says, little children, let no one deceive you. He who practices righteousness is righteous just as he is righteous. You have to practice it. It is who you are. You can state it, but again, it's backed up by the action. You're righteous because you're right, your actions are righteous. Oh, 17. That's okay. Sorry. Yeah. The point's still good there. Verse 17. Whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? That's the one that fits better. But again, the other verse is talking about he who practices righteousness is righteous. If I'm giving cups of cold water, I am a disciple of Jesus Christ. If I'm not, I can say I am, but we don't want to stand at judgment and Jesus say, you didn't visit me. You didn't help me when I was sick, because we really have not been engaged at all in the cups of cold water. I'm thinking about myself. And we know selfishness is condemned, and we understand that often that is the greatest hindrance to me as a Christian, is myself. Well, a second point is that this cup of cold water is not based upon value. Little acts of kindness are just as necessary as big ones. You remember the Pharisees, and they liked to be seen in the marketplace. They liked to blow the trumpet. They liked for all that. They wanted to see everybody, what they're doing. Little acts of kindness are just as necessary as big ones. So we should never get into the idea of, well, I can't really do anything because I don't have anything. You remember in 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 12, Jesus, when he was talking about giving, 2 Corinthians 8:12, he says, "For if if there is first a willing mind, it is accepted according to what one has, and not according to what he does not have." If it's little, it's just as valuable as if it were big. In fact, the more you have, the greater responsibility God, you're going to answer more to God. Because God looks and knows what we're capable of. So we have to factor that in as well. And so a small act of kindness, we tend to think of monetary. But you know, it just might be a kind ear that lends its attention to someone. That's just as valuable as a large contribution of money to a need. Helping someone, listening to someone, being there for someone. Look at this verse in Exodus 23. Exodus 23, I don't have it up there. Sometimes that's good, because then I can hear you turning. I can't hear you turning when I'm talking, because I already got it up there and you already turned. And then all I hear is me trying to get there. Exodus 23, verse 4 and 5. If you meet your enemy's ox or his donkey going astray, you shall shoot it in the head, throw it in the ditch, and bury it. Oh, what, that's not what it says? If you see the donkey of one who hates you lying under its burden, and you refrain from helping it, you shall surely help him with it. Verse 4, if you meet your enemy's ox or his donkey going astray, you shall surely bring it back to him again. Did Jesus have anything to say about loving your enemy? My neighbor knocked on the door. Could not believe it. Couldn't believe it. He needed help. I said, nope. Get out of here, buddy. How could I do that? How could you do that? How could I, as a Christian, do that? When I know so many passages that teach love those that are in opposition to you. And this is very clear. Your enemy's ox goes astray, you bring it back. You find it, you take it back to him. Do the right thing. You see, do the right thing always. And that is, again, that's a personal responsibility. I said none of that to say, you know, I was just as floored as you when I told you my neighbor knocked on the door. That was not who I thought was coming to my door. But the last point is, Jesus is our example. Oh, there we go. In Mark chapter 6, Jesus feeds 5,000 people. But I want to set up just a little bit what's been going on. I think I've actually heard a sermon before where a preacher looks at all the things that's happened in this day in Jesus' life. But we'll highlight some things. Verse 6, or chapter 6, verse 31. They've been busy all day. The apostles gathered to Jesus and told him all things, both what they had done and what they had taught. Verse 30. He said to them, "Come aside by yourselves to a desert place and rest a while. For there were many coming and going, and they did not even have time to eat." Been a busy day. So they departed to a desert place in the boat by themselves. But the multitude saw them departing, and many knew him and ran there on foot from all the cities, and they arrived before them and came together to him. How do you make application of that? Just put my feet up, just turn the television on, been a long day, and the phone rings. Or you have the thought, I should go visit so-and-so. Well, it's been a busy day, and all the people have now found him. And Jesus, verse 34, went out again, and he saw a great multitude, and he was moved with compassion for them because they were like sheep not having a shepherd. So what did he do? He said, "Go home. I'm tired. We're trying to get some rest. We'll pick up tomorrow." He began to teach them many things. When the day was now far spent, his disciples came and said to him, "This is a deserted place and already the hour is late. Send them away that they may go into the surrounding country and villages and buy themselves bread, for they have nothing to eat." But he answered and said to them, "You give them something to eat." It's been a long day. We're going to get caught out here and all these people are going to get hungry and there's no place for them to get any food. We need to send them away. And Jesus says, "You keep them right here and feed them." And that, can you imagine? Feed them? And they, shall we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give them something to eat? I mean, that was a real logistics problem, wasn't it? Could you imagine right now, I said, we got to feed 5,000 people. How would you tackle that? Well, that's when they say, "Well, how many loaves do you have?" And Jesus performs the miracle. But do you remember that who's doing all this work of passing out and collecting, and we get the whole idea of how much is left? Remember, these people, his disciples, they hadn't had a chance to eat. They're tired. And look at the contrast. The day is almost gone, and here's his disciples say, "Send them away." And Jesus says, "You keep them right here." You see the contrast? Send them away. No. Now let's put our word in it. We got some cups of cold water to dish out here. So Jesus tirelessly interacted and engaged himself with others. Look at Luke chapter 4 and verse 40. Luke chapter 4 and verse 40. When the sun was setting, all those who had any that were sick with various diseases brought them to him, and he laid his hands on every one of them and healed them. It's getting dark. It's getting late. We've got to go home. Jesus stayed, and he healed them. And the text would like every last one. And so we need to be reminded, of course, of Jesus' example. Perfect example of someone who spent himself giving out cups of cold water. Now, as we close, Philippians 2 and verse 3, I like the New American Standard, Brother Gary. It says, "Do nothing from selfish or empty conceit, but with humility consider one another as more important than yourselves." That's pretty plain. And that's the mind that he goes on and says, "Let this mind be in you, which is also in Christ Jesus." What did he do? He left heaven. What did he do? He came down here. What did he do? He became a servant. What did he do? This morning's lesson, prophecy had foretold he'd die a cruel, horrible death. He knew it. He knew what he was going to be spit on. He knew all those things. And what did he do? He went to the cross. He went to the cross for us. So this giving of a cup of cold water in the name of the disciple comes with reward. We call this, as Jesus did, lay up for yourself treasures in heaven, not treasures on earth. So it helps me that when I'm doing things, or if I'm doing something for somebody and it's, you know, difficult, the challenges, whatever it is, to remind myself, and I say this, Lisa can confirm, I say, we're just laying up treasures in heaven. Just laying up treasures in heaven. Matthew chapter 25 and verse 34 says, "Come ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world." Yes. Even in that kind of parallel thought there in Matthew 25, there is great reward. And so we labor, and we are not inward. We're thinking of others outward. And I'll leave you again with that thought, and this is probably the overall thing that really strikes me about this lesson is what was said, and that is this who I am, or is this who I used to be? But I can tell you, whichever is the case, it's who you need to be. It's who you and I need to be. I include myself in this, of course, always. Whether I ever say it, if there's ever that, there's those fingers pointing back at me, as they say. So, and when I go through, I've told you before, when I'm going through a lesson, I'm putting it down. These things hit me upside the head, challenge me, sting, you know, all of it. It's got to be real, because this is so important. I hope that's helpful. I hope you have opportunities starting tonight, maybe even before you leave. There's an opportunity to share a cup of cold water. And I hope for sure tomorrow that you have those opportunities and take advantage of those opportunities. Don't look inward. Look to those outward. That's how you make these connections with people that can be so meaningful that you didn't think anything of it, but it forms a bond, a relationship that you can then have the opportunity perhaps to talk to them about Jesus and bring them to Christ. If you're here tonight and you aren't a Christian, you need to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ. We're going to provide that opportunity. Brother Gary has selected an invitation song that we'll sing to invite you to come. Maybe you're a Christian. You need prayers of encouragement. Maybe there's something that's waning in your life. If we can help anyone in any way, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.